From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in. And joining us, Brian Mensch. He is, I hope I got this right, Brian, you're an anesthesiologist, correct?
Correct.
Ah, okay.
We knew that.
The rest is easy. And go ahead.
You also pronounced my name correctly, which no one does, so congratulations.
Well, I have it written down like four or five times all over my paper. And I've had you on,
yes,
on several times.
That's right.
So we're finally getting it.
If we haven't gotten it right by now, we're doing something wrong.
But also, you are the founder maybe co-founder of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Actually, let's start there because it's really interesting. You founded that group back, what, some 10, 15 years ago now?
Well, we formed our organization in the early spring of 2007, and what precipitated it was we experienced a four-week stretch in that January of 2007 of one of the worst winter inversion air pollution circumstances that we'd seen in a long time. And I was very concerned that I didn't hear a lot of discussion in the media or publicly or anywhere about what a health hazard that represented. So I started talking to some of my colleagues who felt the same way, and we ended up forming an ad hoc study group of about eight physicians to try and educate ourselves first about what the medical research showed. And we became so alarmed when we reconvened several weeks later that we then called up the governor and said, we need to talk, because I don't think anyone in the administration of the executive branch of Utah state government really understands what a health hazard this is. And that's not their fault, because most physicians didn't either, including us. Hmm. But after studying it intently, we realized that this message was not getting out there. And so we met with Governor Huntsman and immediately after held a press conference that was actually attended by all the media at LDS Hospital. And basically, it was a call to arms to start addressing this problem.
And how is this, how was the problem manifesting itself health-wise?
I think the easiest way to think of the air pollution, the breadth of air pollution's health consequences is to compare it to smoking cigarettes, because personal air pollution through smoking cigarettes is almost identical to the broad range of health effects that we get from community air pollution. The signature physiologic consequence of air pollution is the same as cigarette smoke, and that's a low-grade inflammation in the arterial system, creating narrowing of the arteries and making the arteries more prone to what we call prothrombotic changes, which is a fancy word for a clot seizure. And so one of the main reasons why air pollution is associated with increased community rates of death is because of its effect on blood vessels, causing heart attacks and strokes. In fact, if you pipe into a community an episode of air pollution, similar to what we had on Saturday, where the air quality was fairly decent, and then almost within minutes, we became smothered by this wave of wildfire smoke. Mm-hmm. Well, in an episode like that, if you took everybody's blood pressure before that wave of air pollution arrived, and then took it again 30 minutes later after the air pollution wave had started to smother the city, you would see almost across the board everybody's blood pressure had started to rise. Now, most of us wouldn't have felt that, but in a person who's on the verge of a heart attack or a stroke, that may be enough to actually put them over the edge. In fact, we see the air pollution increases blood pressure even in children. In fact, even from prenatal exposure, in other words, a baby in its mother's womb, if the mother is breathing air pollution, we know that after birth, later on measured in childhood, that child will have a higher average blood pressure simply because of the air pollution exposure during the pregnancy.
Wow.
So this is a remarkable impact affecting not just the current generation, but affecting subsequent generations. In fact, an air pollution event can affect right off the bat three generations of individuals. Take the pregnant mother again. It can affect her health. It can affect the lifelong health of her baby, the fetus, in critical stages of development. And if the fetus is a female, the fetus is also developing eggs. So one air pollution event can affect three generations of individuals through that mechanism. In fact, there are other studies that suggest, studies of invertebrates, that some chemical insults or pollution insults can actually be found in the genetics of 11 different generations after one exposure.
Wow.
So this is extremely sobering with regard to our own health. But we don't consider the fact that we're also affecting the health of subsequent generations.
Now, in typical bad air scenarios, we all kind of get it. We know there's particulate matter in the atmosphere, PM10, PM2.5. The smaller the particulate matter, the greater the potential for harm. As that matter gets kind of caught and trapped in deep within our lungs.
Well, there's that, but there's more to it than that.
Okay.
The smaller the particles, the less likely you can exhale them.
Right.
And then at the next several stages of impact on a person's health, the small size of the particles continues to be an advantage in terms of precipitating disease, because not only can they get inhaled more deeply, they are more easily picked up by the bloodstream. And then when the blood is actually distributed throughout the body and starts interacting with individual cells, because of those smart particles, they can penetrate cellular membranes, including the nucleus of the cell, and do their biological damage more easily if the particles are smaller. And that's one of the reasons why wildfire smoke is probably the most toxic type of pollution the average person ever inhales, because those particles are even smaller than what we typically see from traffic pollution and smokestacks.
So that's one thing that Chris and I really wanted to talk with you about today is, you know, specifically wildfire smoke. What's in it, and how does that impact us?
Wildfire smoke is a potpourri of several different components. There are gases like carbon monoxide, VOCs. There are particles like the PM2.5, and then the ultrafines, which is a description of particles that are even smaller than 2.5 microns. And then there are chemicals as well, especially if wildfires include the destruction of buildings, homes, and so forth. There's a mixture of chemicals attached to these. In fact, another reason why wildfire smoke is so toxic is that it is extremely saturated with a group of compounds called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Mm-hmm. And that's the group of chemicals that are derivations of benzene. In other words, the term poly means multiple benzene rings. These are extremely toxic particles or toxic chemicals. And we found that if a person is burning, say, wood in a fireplace for 1 hour, 10 pounds of wood can release as many polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons as somewhere between 6,000 and 30,000 packs of cigarettes.
Wow.
If you take that same sort of scenario and say, now we're gonna see the pollution from thousands and thousands of square miles of wildfire, and a lot of that is timber, and a lot of that is brush. That wildfire is also releasing massive quantities of these toxic chemicals. So you have gases, mm-hmm. you have particles, and then you have chemicals, many of which are attached to those particles. So it's kind of a toxic trifecta.
Right.
And so that's undoubtedly one of the reasons why studies have found that, say, take the respiratory system, wildfire particles can be 10 times more damaging to the cells that line the respiratory tract as pollution from other sources. So it isn't just that the air pollution looks awful and the PM2.5 levels are high and we get a red or an orange alert from the state agency. That doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of how serious the situation this is.
Let me reintroduce you, Brian. We're speaking with Dr. Brian Mensch. He is an anesthesiologist and also one of the founders of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. And we're talking specifically about wildfire-based smoke, the physical components of it, chemical components of it, and the risks associated with breathing this smoke over time. Brian, that's a good point. Again, they think that, yeah, when we have this image of these large wildfires, of course, the vast majority of the fire is in a natural setting. It's, you know, forests that are burning, scrub, sage, etc. But then occasionally when structures go up, that's, like you say, we're burning chemicals, we're burning plastic, we're burning insulation, we're burning furniture, you know, and so all of these volatile organic compounds, and like you say, the PAHs are generated, and they go up in the atmosphere, and so you have this stew or broth of chemicals and particulate matter.
Well, in case you're not repulsed enough already, add to that wildfires have been shown to release toxic heavy metals into the atmosphere like mercury. We know from the decades of emissions from coal-fired power plants all over the globe mm-hmm. that mercury has gotten into the upper atmosphere from primarily these coal-fired power plants' emissions. So the mercury circulates in the atmosphere, and then eventually the mercury deposits on everything, including land, including brush, including trees. Now when you have these massive wildfires in Siberia, in Australia, in the western United States, in Greece, and on and on and on, that we're seeing all the time now, mercury is one of the things that's being volatilized into the atmosphere as a result of these forest fires. And now take it one step further. All the nuclear radiation particles that got scattered over the Chernobyl area and much of Eastern Europe, when there are wildfires in that part of the world, all those ionized particles will be volatilized as well. So there was great concern a couple of years ago when there were massive wildfires around Moscow. That would be resuspending nuclear radiation into the atmosphere and distributing that throughout the globe as well. So it's almost impossible to grasp the number of toxic components to wildfire smoke.
And there's an element of the smoke that sort of changes over time, right? So from the moment it burns to maybe when it blows over us in Park City a few days later.
Yeah, that research is still in its infancy, but air pollution particles can change their toxic profile as they age in the atmosphere. And so it's a little early to say how much of an issue that is, but there is emerging research that, in fact, in the case of some of these components, the longer it's in the atmosphere, the more toxic it can become.
So given all of this frankly terrifying information about how the smoke that's surrounding us all right now is.
I hate to be the messenger of this awful, but
you know, somebody has to do it, right?
Right.
You know, given all of that, how do we best protect ourselves from these environmental conditions?
Is wearing my mask going to reduce the amount of harmful chemicals or this PM 2.5?
Well, not all masks are created equal.
Right.
An N95 mask, and I hope people are familiar with that term, is going to provide much better protection than a typical cloth mask that has become ubiquitous in the era of the pandemic. Now, that protection is true not only of the COVID virus, but also of air pollution particles. And in fact, we should, in case we haven't made this disturbing enough, air pollution can also increase the transmission and the severity and the lethality of the COVID infections, because the virus can attach itself to these tiny particles and be carried further because of that. And it also, this particulate pollution that we're experiencing now decreases the impact of ultraviolet radiation on the viruses. So it increases the duration of viable viruses in the atmosphere as well as their distribution. So for both air pollution protection and COVID protection, N95 masks are very, very much superior to these typical cloth masks. So that's one of the things that people can do. Other things are just are common sense things, like don't go outside when the air pollution is this bad more than you have to. Certainly don't exercise outside in air pollution levels this bad. And we recommend air purifiers in the home. And it's worth noting that a lot of high-end air purifiers will also have an ionization feature that supposedly allows an electrostatic charge to capture more particles. But in fact, you don't want that feature, because that feature in most cases creates ozone, which is another serious air pollution toxin that we haven't really talked about. So air purifiers are very helpful. They can be very effective in cleaning out your indoor atmosphere. And air purifiers, for that reason, will help decrease the risk of COVID transmission. And so one of the things that we're going to be pushing the legislature right now is investing in air purifiers for classrooms, both to decrease air pollution levels as well as decrease the risk of COVID transmission. And there are a few other things you can do, because triggering an inflammatory process is what air pollution does. Anti-inflammatory measures are worthwhile. A lot of people should be taking, say, an aspirin a day. I'm not saying that everybody needs to start doing that, and do consult your physician about it. But unless there's a reason for a person not to be taking an aspirin a day, like they maybe already be on a blood thinner, an anti-inflammatory medicine, as simple and as relatively benign as aspirin, may help.
I'm curious how we could measure the air quality conditions in the spaces where we're living and working. Are there air quality monitors that are available to the general public that are reasonably accurate?
Yeah, there are. In fact, modestly priced pollution monitors like from purpleair.org, you can probably get one now for under a couple hundred bucks. Some air purifiers come with their own sensors, which are not anywhere near as accurate, but give you a general idea of the air quality inside your room or your building. So to answer your question, yes, there are some reasonably inexpensive pollution monitors that are not as accurate as the hundred thousands of dollars worth of monitoring equipment that the state has, but they are very useful. So the answer to that question is yes, that's a good idea. In fact, purpleair.org has a real-time network of these monitors throughout the world, mm-hmm. thousands of them now, literally. And it all started here in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
I personally know the guy who started it, yep. and he lives out in Draper, and he started it because of all the dust created by the Geneva gravel pit near his home, and he was sick of it.
Yep.
We have actually interviewed him on the show and learned about the Purple Air Network.
Their
network might be time to revisit that.
Go to Purple, and even as a source of information on air quality in the area, because there's
it's my go-to.
There are lots of individuals who have a Purple Air monitor set up in their home, or set up outside their home.
Yeah, so, and a lot of the impetus for this was people who had neighbors who burned wood either for recreation or for heat, and they were enveloping their neighbors in these regular plumes of wood smoke, which we just talked about is one of the most toxic types of air pollution you can ever be exposed to. And so neighbors of people who would do that were the first ones to start getting these personal air monitors so they could document what they were exposed to. And I've personally been an expert witness now in several cases where people have used that information to try and stop the exposure they were subjected to by their neighbors.
So just a couple more minutes. I got a text from a teacher friend of mine who wants to know a little more about air purifier systems. If she wants to put an air purifier in her classroom, is there a technology type, not necessarily a brand name, but a technology type that you would recommend?
Well, it isn't necessarily a technology or a brand name. You can even make your own relatively inexpensive air purifier by getting a basic fan, getting a couple of HEPA air filters and putting it in front of the fan and blowing the air through in your room in front of the HEPA filters.
Huh.
You can set that up for probably a third of the cost of an air purifier. But you definitely can get commercial air purifiers that are a little nicer to look at, a little easier to operate. But what's important about the air purifier are the specs of how small a particle will that air purifier capture.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller the particle it will capture, the better the protection. So when we talk about PM2.5, that's 2.5 microns in size and smaller, you definitely want to capture particles of that size, but you also want to go to a unit that will capture what's called ultrafines, which is a description of particles in the range of 0.1 microns in size. So the principle is the smaller the particle you can capture with that unit, the better the protection. And again, I don't recommend people get one that has a, quote, ionizing feature or an electrostatic feature to it, because that will pick up a few more particles, but it'll also create ozone, which you don't want.
Oh, okay. That's
good,
that's
guidance.
That's good. Yeah, exactly. Well, we got to wrap up, Ryan. I think you've given us enough that Nell and I will be... We'll be in therapy for another couple weeks.
Good news.
Yeah.
You know, at least we've got some action items here. We know how to help address some of these personal health issues.
I can't help but think about all the firefighters, all the people who are on the front lines.
I know.
Who are on day in and day out, Brian, exposing themselves to this smoke. Many of them not wearing any type of respirator system because it limits their physical abilities to get around. So without, you know, you get it, you understand that those folks are facing a potential health issues going forward.
You are absolutely right. And I'll just add to that we have glorified and celebrated first responders in 9/11, who many of whom literally sacrificed their lives that day. But we learned sacrifice their lives over the ensuing years because of all the diseases they got from all the pollution from the 9/11 tragedy. The firefighters who are fighting these wildfires throughout this country, week after week, month after month, and some of them year after year after year, I don't know if they realize it, but the rest of the public ought to realize it. They are literally sacrificing their lives for everyone else. So we need to be as grateful to them as we are to first responders, as we are to healthcare workers. These people are sacrificing themselves for everyone else.
Well, we're grateful to you, Brian, for the work you've done as part of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Thanks again, as always, Brian, for coming on the show.
Thanks for dealing with the issue.
All right, we'll be in touch. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.